It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2020. Peter Hundersmark is a global portfolio manager at Flagship Asset Management, a specialist global investment management boutique based in Cape Town, South Africa. Flagship was established in 2001. And is one of South Africa's most awarded boutique asset managers with deep experience across asset classes in developed and emerging markets. Peter has been investing internationally for more than 14 years. Prior to Flagship, he worked at Coronation Fund Managers for 10 years and also co-managed a global equities boutique at Old Mutual Investment Group. Peter holds a BCom in economics from Stellenbosch University and an MSc finance from Nyenrode University in the Netherlands. Great to have you here, Peter, joining us at European Investing Summit. I very much look forward to your presentation. I'll turn it to you. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, John, and welcome everyone. Thanks for joining me here on this call. Thanks to John and everyone behind the scenes for making today work and for the introduction. As John said, I'm with Flagship Asset Management. I'm going to take you briefly through two slides that outline who we are and how we think about the world in terms of investing. And then I've got a short presentation of 10 slides for you on our best European idea, which is Zalando. I think it's a firm that many of you there in Europe will know quite well. And then I'll finish off with my summary slide and hopefully open the floor to some questions. So as John said, Flagship is a specialist global asset manager. We are based just to the southeast of Cape Town in a suburb called Constantia. We were established in 2001. That was when our flagship worldwide flexible fund was established and is now going on to nearly its 20-year track record next year. We are 100% owned by staff and directors. And I guess one of the defining aspects of Flagship is our focus. So we believe that success in any endeavor comes from focus, and from that flows that we only run three strategies, a global equity, a global flexible, and a global fund of funds strategy. And as John said, we are, as of 2020, one of the most awarded boutique asset managers in the country. In terms of what sets us apart and how we think about the world, we are long-term investors, fundamental-based investors as well. The global managers, which is myself and Kyle Wales, that look after the global funds, have been investing internationally for over 14 years. And one of the ways that we build portfolios, which is quite distinct, is that we focus on very concentrated portfolios of maximum 25 stocks, as we believe that the benefits of diversification diminish quite dramatically post 25 positions. From that flows the fact that we need to know our stocks very well, and we thus spend quite a bit of time doing research and building these concentrated portfolios. The stock I'm going to take you through today is Zalando. It is a core holding in the funds. It's actually our largest equity position in the flexible and in the global equity funds at the moment at around 7%, and has been obviously a great performer for us throughout this year, when we've noticed that many stocks like Zalando that have benefited from the lockdown restrictions globally have seen their businesses kickstarted quite dramatically, as I'll also show in the slides. So Zalando was founded in 2008. It has a market share in Europe of 1.8%, and that is the function of its revenue of around 6.5 billion and its addressable market of roughly 450 billion, which is the apparel market in Europe. It has 34 million active customers, which is 4.5% of the population of Greater Europe, and it represents 2,500 brands. There were 145 million orders placed on the platform in 2019 at an average basket size of 56 euros. As the small graphic on the right of this slide shows you, the market share currently enjoyed by Zalando of 1.8% is less than what they target, which is 5%, and certainly less of what the online fashion market in Europe is expected to be for them. That is, as you can see, the white circle is far larger than 25%, which shows that management believes that their addressable market is actually quite in excess of 25%, and we agree. The active users have grown since 2013 from roughly 13 million to over 30 million in 2019, and that has now pushed up to 34 million as of the Q2 2020. Just taking a step back and thinking about what Zalando seeks to be, many would know it as an apparel sales site. So it is a site where you go when you're looking for jeans or shoes or bangles or any type of fashion-related accessory. So Zalando seeks to be that, but also more. So when it first started out, it focused mostly on shoes, and that was back in 2008, 2009. And it has since made a journey towards being a fashion platform, much as Spotify would be for music or Netflix would be for movies and series. The content of fashion is something that Zalando wants to own. So not only being the platform that users access fashion, but also assisting and partnering with the brands on their platform to supply them with all that they need to meet their customers' needs. And this is the platform model that is the most valuable part of Zalando and is the key behind our investment thesis. So looking at Zalando's journey over the past 12 years, since its start in 2008 and 2009, where it focused mainly on shoes and had a more value proposition, meaning selling more cheaply, and it obtained leadership in only one European country, which is Germany, as opposed to its European leadership today. It expanded since 2009, both in category, in geography, and also in its logistical footprint, which has been expanding rapidly since 2017. And it is well on its way now towards the platform model, again, that I will be discussing in detail in the 2021 to 2025 financial years. So the big picture behind Zalando is that there is a large addressable market of 450 billion for apparel. There is a portion of that market that will be captured by online apparel sales. Zalando is currently the leader in that space and seeks to assist both the consumer and the brand on that platform to achieve its grand ambition of being the home of fashion in Europe. So why do we like it? As I mentioned initially, we only hold a small number of equity stocks in our portfolios, and hence we focus on high quality businesses as we determine them to be. So putting that a little bit differently, when you only own 25 stocks, you can't own junk. You have to own a business that is resilient and that has a business model that will be able to survive different market and economic cycles. So addressing the first one, the scalability in a large total addressable market, what Zalando has created is a network of logistics and buying, which has cost them a large amount of money, but has created an enormous amount of scale for the business today. So much as Amazon, which I think is a business and an investment case many of you will be familiar with, it has decided to invest upfront into an opportunity that it sees very large, and then moving on from that opportunity to then network into other areas that they can attack the opportunity from a position of strength. Naturally, that investment upfront leads to very low accounting profits, which is something I will address in the next three slides. The second aspect that we like about Zalando is its network effects. So those of you that also invest in platform businesses will know that the Zalando value proposition is strengthened by the quality of partners on the platform, which in turn leads consumers to want to shop on the platform. And this is a virtual circle that the leaders in these e-commerce platforms, like social networks, like Amazon, it is a leadership effect which they certainly enjoy. It has a moat that is regularly invested in. That's on the top right here. That's also something I'll address. So they've obviously created this enormous logistical capability and this buying capability, but they continue to invest in their value proposition, which is something we like to see. And then finally, we see signs of very prudent financial management and shareholder alignment. So Zalando has consistently taken very good care of its balance sheet, and this is proven through the various cycles that they've been through over the past 12 years and have survived quite capably. They typically have net cash on the balance sheet or anywhere between 500 to a billion euros on the balance sheet at any given time over the past 8 years. And management is incentivized. So we place great stock in owner-operated businesses or family-run businesses. And the three founders of Zalando have shown quite a strong aligned incentive with the other shareholders, which would be investors like you and I, who also are incentivized on the same share class. Addressing one of those first points that we liked, so a scalable business in a large total addressable market. As I mentioned, Zalando has expanded over the past 10 years its logistical footprint. This logistical footprint costs a lot of money, but the vision here is quite startling. It is the founders believing, and correctly believing, that the market opportunity is very large and we need to invest now to take advantage of it in 10 years' time. And as you can see here, the current setup of warehousing and logistics assets that Zalando has around Europe can capture 20 billion of gross merchandise value versus the current 8.2. So they have invested ahead of what they believe they can achieve. 14 billion, but they've also been investing and have announced plans to invest more recently, which will lift that GMV capability. And then on the right here, you see the pie chart showing what their current GMV is of 8.2 and where they target they may be in the next 4 to 5 years. As you can see, there's still quite a lot of market to address. I spoke about a moat that is invested in, and there are many different ways to look at this and to measure that. Most effectively, you would look at how many resources you are putting into your technological capability. And typically, one would look at the R&D expense, which is expensed on the income statement or capitalized on the balance sheet. But another more interesting way to look at it is how many employees that Zalando is putting into their technological related staff complement. They have about 14,000 employees, and just over 2,000 in the last financial year were in technology, focusing on their marketing or fulfillment or other tech-related opportunities. And we compare that here to Adidas and to ASOS, which are both apparel-focused businesses that everyone here would know well. And we can see that here, Zalando shows that they are investing behind a technology, which is something that the leader needs to do, and something that, again, we believe is of very high quality. So it's to us a quality business. It's a business that we understand well, but you know, the key question that that all of us need to address with all of our big equity holdings is, what is it worth? So on the chart here on the left, I show that Zalando has been very successful since 2011 to the last financial year and grown its revenues nearly 13 times. But net profit, as I show on the right here, has really stagnated, if even gone backwards. So if you look at the 100 million that they earned in accounting profit in 2019 versus 2015, it's even earning less. So many investors scratch their heads. And we see a constant criticism that Zalando isn't allowing the full potential of its revenue to express itself in the income statement. However, we see that very differently. We see that the profit margin that Zalando earns is really a leftover in Zalando's growth equation. So on this chart, I show the years 2010 to 2019. And the yellow is the loss or profit that Zalando makes versus the cost of sales, the fulfillment, the marketing, and the general and administrative expenses that the company has to fund. As you can see, and as the previous chart also showed, the profit margin is very low. However, you will notice that marketing costs have been starting off from very high, so 24% of sales, and have slowly been scaled down. The lesson here is that Zalando is willing to spend whatever they believe is necessary to attack the market opportunity that they have. And one way of investing in that is in marketing costs. So this is in search optimization or in billboards or in any type of video content or any type of transaction or call to action related marketing expense that will lead to sales. Typically, G&A, which is general administrative expenses, have also been scaled since 2012 to now, falling as a percentage of sales. And then fulfillment, which is the business of getting product to the customers and dealing with returns, is an area where they have not seen any scale. So this, again, is an area where they have been willing to spend. Cost of sales would be the difference between the retail selling price and the buy price that they enjoy. And their gross margin is between 40 and 45%. So this is also a cost which should remain quite constant. The point of this slide is to show that they do make a small amount of profits, but the most of the 100% revenue that Zalando earns or generates is spent to grow the business further, whether it is in fulfillment, in marketing, or in the leftover G&A expenses. So what this has led us to believe is that the market focuses too much on the wholesale business, which is the first party business, which is the business of buying and selling clothes, and not enough on the platform that Zalando is trying to develop, which is through its partner program, its fulfillment services, and its marketing services. Again, I come to this from the angle of trying to understand what other investors want to believe about the stock or are believing about the stock and why I believe my thesis is different. And this focus on the profitability only of the Zalando 1P business is certainly in our minds one aspect that is leading to the misunderstanding of the stock and its true potential. So this is my final slide and is sadly a little bit messy, but I'm going to take you through it quite slowly. This is a stab at what we believe the ultimate Zalando business model can look like. So if we look at this column here, this is what the wholesale business we believe can achieve. So that is the business just of buying and selling clothes. We believe that they will, over the next 4 or 5 years, be able to generate a gross merchandise value of 12 billion. Again, compare that to the 450 billion market. We believe that is achievable if they continue to execute well. That 12 billion of GMV, once adjusted for VAT, leads to a revenue of 10 billion. We believe that economies of scale and buying will lead to a gross margin of 45%. Zalando's gross margin, as I have discussed, has fluctuated between 40 and 45%. And it is our belief that as you grow larger, as you are able to scale and to get better purchasing terms, that gross margin is something that should either be maintained or even increase. And that leads to a gross profit of 4.5 billion. We have taken certain views on the fulfillment, marketing, and admin expenses discussed in the previous two slides. And it is here where our, I guess, big calls in terms of profits can be made. And that is that marketing and admin costs for a normal steady state Zalando are far lower as a percentage of sales than the current 5.6 and 9% that we see in the income statement. Interestingly, we do not believe that fulfillment, which is the logistics ability to deliver and to pick up inventory, is that scalable. So you'll notice that we keep that at 28% of revenue. However, that does remain one of those silver bullet expenses where you have an enormous amount of tech and human ingenuity being thrown at trying to lessen that cost, trying to get the returns that are based on sizing issues to be fixed. And we do see some movement on that, but we're not yet at a point where we believe that that can be scaled further. And that leads to an EBIT margin of 9% versus their highest ever achieved of 5%. It's worth noting that in their core regions of Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, Zalando already enjoys a much higher EBIT margin of close to 12-13%, according to our understanding. And that is because of the marketing and admin costs that they're able to bring down. The gray box, which is the platform business model, encompasses everything that Zalando can offer to its clients on the platform. So this is Nike, Adidas, Levi's. These are the large brands that are partnering with Zalando and using Zalando to be their way to reach their customers, to understand their customers, to take care of their deliveries, their returns, and to be truly the partner of the largest platform in Europe. And it is here that we believe that an additional 8 billion of sales can be booked into this partner program. And these e-commerce enabled platform services, such as fulfillment, delivering for your customer, marketing services, helping your customers understand who is buying from them, how much are they buying, when do they like to buy, what is the best way to promote to them, where do your customers sit, what is the main reason they're returning. So these are the things that Zalando has the most experience on. And this is, and most importantly, all of these value-added services are much higher EBIT margin. So even on a much lower revenue line, because the profit margin on the partner program and the marketing services are so much higher, you can generate nearly half the EBIT you do on the wholesale business, to be exact, 630 million, to achieve what is a 4 to 5 year EBIT number that we believe this business can achieve. So the Zalando of 5 years' time is a business we believe is going to be very different. We believe that the platform model that they have set out or embarked upon is something that they have executed extremely well on. We believe we've got an aligned management team and an enormous opportunity. And yes, we have a very large holding in that in the business as a result of that. So with that, that's my final slide. Thank you very much for your attention. My contact details are here on the slide. Should anyone wish to engage with me further, if there's been any creative juices flowing on the stock or any dissenting views, I'd love to hear them. And with that, over to you, John.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for this very interesting presentation. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on the management team, as we've seen with Amazon, having Jeff Bezos there in the driver's seat has been a huge factor. I'd be curious to hear a little bit more about how you view the management here in terms of even evolving the company over time, which probably will be needed over, let's say, a decade or two going forward.
That's a great question, John. Thanks for that. To start off with, I'd say I rate Jeff Bezos very highly. And one of the reasons I do is because there are instances where the founder of the business, or the person that gets the business onto onto the right footing, is not necessarily the person or the group of people that can take the business further on its corporate journey. And Jeff is one of those that is able to do both. He can be both a visionary and also quite good at pulling the people around him to also run a company very effectively over long periods of time. So the management of Zalando, the founders are three ex-management consultants, two of which I've met on a number of occasions, Ruben Ritter, the CEO, and David Gentz. very impressive in the sense that the vision that they've had from the start has been well communicated and well understood in through interactions with them and has been consistent. So these are guys that they saw the ball very big, they understood the opportunity, and they knew what they had to do to execute on it. So I like that consistency of vision. The secondly, what we like about it is they've managed to draw the right amount of talent around them. As Zalando has continued its growth, it's obviously required different things, not just vision. And you know, from the way we see how they report and interactions with other levels of management, it seems that Zalando is able to execute on that journey as a company and not just as a startup that it was 10 years ago. And finally, I mentioned the incentivization. It's incredibly important. And not only that management is incentivized to do well, but that they are incentivized on the same structure as other shareholders, and that structure being the class of share. So it's not just a target on, you know, a type of a ghost share or some type of other product or just a vision of the company, but you know, the company management actually have options in the Zalando share, and if they reach certain targets, specifically revenue and growth related, then they will benefit and shareholders will benefit. And that's something that is quite key.
Well, I'm based here in Switzerland, and we are very, I'd say, big and growing customers of Zalando, given that I have family with three kids in the teenage years. One question I had for you, since you talked about the partner program and brands like Nike and Adidas, I know that my kids shop both on Zalando as well as the Nike and Adidas websites that are kind of localized in Switzerland. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on that value proposition, and why would a Nike or Adidas, you know, want to drive more through Zalando as opposed to investing in their own effort?
That's also another very good question. There's two reasons for that. The first is the eyeballs that they're able to get to their own site versus what Zalando is able to offer. And what's interesting is in Switzerland, the country you mentioned, both Zalando and Nike achieve the same eyeballs when measured by traffic, web traffic to their sites or to their app. Zalando and Nike are neck to neck. And I mean, you have chosen the premier sports sporting apparel company globally in Nike. I suppose that first reason is cost. So typically, to invest in your own network, to be able to deliver and to pick up from your clients, you really need to have a great system that not many companies have been able to execute on up to this point. Nike is one exception where they, you know, they have a great e-commerce portal, and they have the minds and the talent there to also be able to execute on the pickup and delivery, which is an important part of the infrastructure. There are thousands of companies that do not have what Nike has, and they would be far more easy customers of Zalando. That being said, Nike sees the value of being present on the Zalando platform and having all of the data that provides, the addressable market that provides. So, you know, they see the value in that, and they use both. And I guess the fact that Nike uses them at all is testament to how powerful the platform is. The second reason that they would use Zalando and not just their own platform is the question of assortment. So when your kids are looking on Nike, it's probably because they're looking for assortment that's not available on the Zalando platform. And that's becoming a bigger and bigger part of Nike's business. And it's, you know, they enter into collaborations with very famous celebrities, and those celebrities will design certain ranges for them, specifically shoes. And that will lead to, you know, a huge event that's going to happen on the Nike website at a certain time, and then you'll be able to buy that pair of shoes. Zalando will obviously not participate as much as the brand owner would in selling its own collaborated celebrity lines on its own site. So it's a question of how much do you want to spend in terms of who you want to reach, and then what assortment do you want to sell on each platform on your own and on the Zalando platform.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Well, I can definitely attest to the trust that Zalando has built with us as consumers, simply by virtue of how easy it is to, let's say, return things, and definitely prefer using Zalando versus some, you know, kind of lesser brand, let's say, than Nike, in terms of their direct e-commerce. I think the level of confidence with Zalando is just much higher. Can you just talk a little bit about where we are in that kind of scaling cycle in terms of things like returns, impact on gross margin, and the profitability a little bit more, kind of how do we get to that long-term target model?
It's very interesting because the fulfillment that you talk about, the pickup and the inventory management, it's also one of those businesses where you would expect scale. So the ability to put more volume through your logistics center should lead to a lower unit cost, and you should be able to scale it, as the word implies. And hence, you should see greater profitability from that service. Interestingly enough, and I did touch on it on the last slide, Zalando a couple of years ago made an interesting comment that they were actually seeing diseconomies of scale in their fulfillment, which means that with the increased volumes that were being put through their logistics capability, it wasn't adding to profitability, it was subtracting from it. And that was a very interesting comment for me. And it led to me, digging into it a bit more and understanding that that part of the business, the delivery and the pickup, is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's great to have because it allows you this moat that I discussed. It allows you the control of the process, which leads to the trust that you mentioned. And it also provides one of the key linchpins that you can offer to your partner program, as delivery is something that is technical, it is costly, and requires huge investments. On the other hand, it is, which is all the good things. The bad thing is, John, I don't believe it is that scalable from the current levels. So I would say, when I look at the last slide that I showed, that fulfillment taking up a very large percentage of the cost of Zalando being at 28%, that shows that the gains in the profitability that Zalando is going to enjoy is not going to come, in my mind, from a better fulfillment process. So as a small anecdote, Zalando will always tell you that their best customers are the ones that return the most. And that sounds very counterintuitive until you understand that the best Zalando customer is someone who buys 150 or 200 euros worth of goods and then returns half of it. Why is that great? It's great because you still have a 100 euro order. Even though they have returned quite a large percentage, it was to start off with a very large order. So these are the big Zalando customers that are able to embrace the model. And by embracing the model, it means they buy a lot and they will try it on at home. They will experiment with it and then return what they don't want. And that's ideal because that shows that people are trusting the model, experimenting with the model, and that's great. So you get the good and the bad from the logistics capability. But to answer your question, I don't think it's that scalable. And I think most of the wins will come from the marketing and G&A and cost of goods sold, which to me, in my mind, are more easily scalable than logistics.
And then when it comes to the content side that you talked about earlier, kind of comparing with a Netflix or Spotify, I personally haven't noticed a ton of that. I mean, they have great filtering capability and kind of discovery capability on the platform. Is that really what you're talking about, or do you expect them to have kind of more of a content presence going forward?
I guess when I talk about them being, the home of fashion-related decisions, as Spotify and Netflix are, I see it as both the user of the platform and the provider to the platform as both seeing value in it. So if you look at Spotify, it's a place for artists and for labels to reach consumers. And it is also a way for consumers to consume music. And it is that, they're offering something to both sides that makes it valuable. It's that confluence that I'm talking about. So if you think about Zalando being the home of fashion or curated related decisions, it's because Adidas has seen that if they put a pair of their latest collaboration onto the platform, that they know that they can sell that out almost immediately, and the Zalando team will price it at the level that they want. They will promote it to the level that they want. They'll make sure that their customers get a great experience. And on the other hand, the customers will be on that platform knowing that they will be able to get that product at the price that they were told and with the trust that they have come to expect. So it's more that that best expression of the network effect when I'm talking about being a destination for fashion like Spotify or Netflix.
Great. And perhaps one more question before I invite our members to reach out to you with their own thoughts or questions. In terms of the key data points that you're tracking to kind of gauge how the thesis is playing out here, what would be, the two or three kind of main things you're looking at?
So users is a big one. Obviously the quicker wins that they made in the early years won't be repeated, but I would expect to see a steady growth in the number of people, the active users that are engaging with the platform and participating with Zalando. Website visits, mobile visits is another one to show that people are aware of it, that it's top of mind. Market share versus competitors. So Amazon, for example, has its own fashion offering, has not yet been as successful because they don't, again, in my opinion, don't focus on it as well as Zalando does. And they also sit with the issue that there are many brands that do not want to expose themselves in the same way on the Amazon platform as they would on a Zalando platform where it is fashion first. But those are the most important. So it's really, it's focusing on the users that are participating with Zalando and also on the market share. Because ultimately that's to us the biggest picture of relevance of the platform over the next 5 years. Should those exhibit a slower growth than we anticipate, then it would have to be revisited.
Terrific. Well, Peter, thank you so much. Truly appreciate you coming on to share the thesis and participating in this year's European Investing Summit. Thank you also for showing your email address here on the screen. That's very helpful, and I invite everyone listening to feel free to reach out as well. Great to have you, and thanks.
Of course. Thank you very much, John.
Goodbye for now.
Goodbye.